Welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We've been in business for over two decades. We operate from one of the finest facilities in the United States, probably the finest facilities built from the ground up for, you know, security, peace of mind, and a lot of other things. It's a very beautiful building. A lot of people, when they come in and check it out, it's an enjoyable experience. It's a very nice building. I'm very thankful that I built it when I did back in like 05, 06. I spent some pretty serious cabbage, as they would say, building it, and now I couldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's, you know, it's a solid brick building, and the brick wraps a CMU block that's filled with concrete and rebar and a bunch of stuff, but it's actually an absolutely gorgeous building. The brickwork is phenomenal. I've walked around with a mason here recently, and he's like, man, you know, I mean, these days are gone. Isn't that sad to say? Not only has inflation hit, it's hurting people. And that's the truth. People don't realize that, you know, oh, the economy is great. The economy is great. Trump is doing everything he can under the circumstances to bring the money home. That is so important to understand. The Fed's a mess. The Fed is our ultimate demise. It's a disaster that's just you know, it's just an inevitable disaster that's just being held off. Our financial system, economic system, is really not good, to put it lightly. Trump is operating within that system, I think, in all fairness, probably because there's not much else he can do. We will find out when he gets reelected if he hasn't, you know, if he has an understanding of the Fed. But the problem is, to shut it down, I can't even imagine what it'd do to America at this point. To go on any kind of a standard, a gold standard, silver, you can't be on a silver standard, but gold standard would be, I mean, gold would literally be, I did the math years ago. I'm sure if I did the math now with all of the increase in fiat currency that's been created, the fact that our deficit's tapping, what, $25 trillion, I'm guessing gold would have to be set at $100,000 an ounce, perhaps, maybe $75, $80. I'm not sure. I'd have to do the math. That tells you how bad we've inflated our currency. And if I had time, I'd run the numbers, but I won't do that right now because I'll just eat up airtime. But it's crazy. The reserves that America supposedly has, you always hear that there's no gold in Fort Knox. Wrong. There's gold in Fort Knox. I know a guy who's seen it. A very reputable guy who was brought there to verify the authenticity of these 1933 $20 gold pieces, which were supposed to have never been released from the mint upon FDR's you know, the word they use, confiscation of gold, it's a little deceptive because they weren't out doing the Gestapo thing. As far as I know, no one was arrested for possession. But what they did in 1933 is they discovered that they had 33 times the amount of currency out as they had gold to back it. In other words, the currency that said backed by gold, they had 33 times. When they created the Federal Reserve Act and the Federal Reserve notes, the notes were dated 1929. The series of 1929 was the notes. A lot of times you'll see bank notes that'll say series of 2013 or whatever, and they'll still be making them in 16 until they make a new series or whatever. So they maintain the series of 1929 paper money intentionally, deceptively, because it had a gold clause. It said it's redeemable in gold. It was not. But they did that to deceive the public into turning their gold into the bank. I started real heavily into this business in the 90s. And I had many old folks that I would see, and they'd tell me, you know, I took all my gold in and put it in the bank, and I figured I could get it back out later, and I went back and I found out I could not. Well, that's what the whole goal was. When they confiscated the gold, or they began a buyback, they bought gold back at $20.67 per troy ounce, beginning in like August of 33 or whatever, April or August. $20.67 an ounce. They did that for a couple of years. People were patriotically returning their gold to the banks and, you know, all to help FDR, to help the nation that was in this terrible depression. Why did depression come along? The depression came along specifically because of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913. At the time of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, the average home sales price in America was in the 700 in change dollar range. Some areas were 1,000. Long Island, New York, was like $1,150. Think about that. Houses in Long Island that are still standing today were selling around the turn of the century, 1900-ish, for $1,150. You know what those houses are worth now? A couple mil. And so the Federal Reserve brought in fiat currency. And they brought in fake money, and I've mentioned it before, but it literally reminds me of four boys sitting in a fort, you know, making up an idea going, hey, what if we made our own money and we got everybody to bite off on it? That is exactly what they did. Power is money. Money is power. And that's what they did. They had, these were four of the wealthiest men in the world. That's where the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, comes from. Crazy name. I've had Christians go, ooh, that sounds really bad. I don't want to read a book like that. And there's an old saying, you can't judge a book by the cover. Yeah. Well, the author picks a name and that's what it is. But it's the story of how this all went down. It's a story of the history of currency in America, money. And the bottom line, you know, is the fact that money, you know, money makes the world go round. The history of money is really interesting when you get into the Rothschilds and everything from the 1500s. They became the bankers. They were financing both sides of war. They make their most money on war. They end up owning everything. I mean, let's face it, right? And so around that time, that's when they started making money easy to get. Before the Federal Reserve Act, it was, you know, people just didn't borrow money, and I'm not condoning it at all. We live in a nation now, we don't know any better. People do not know better. We live in a nation now, I'm sorry, we live in a world now. You cannot literally function without a credit card. I don't know how you could. It's crazy, you know, and there's different theories there. The word Visa, you know, if you get into the actual Greek, Hebrew, and Roman roots, when John, the Apostle John, wrote the book of Revelation, what he may have seen when he said 666 was, or 616, depending on the order of things, and I'll explain that in a minute. Essentially, here's the deal. The VI, Visa, VI is Roman numeral what? 6. V plus 1. 5 plus 1. 6. The symbols S and A, which are, they're very similar to the ancient Hebrew and ancient Greek numbers for 6. And they used to read backwards. So if he said 666 or 616, it's just the way the thing was flipped back, and I won't get into all that right now. There's a high likelihood that Visa could ultimately be the conduit by which the mark of the beast is given or contained, which makes complete sense. Those who did not have the mark were unable to trade, buy, or sell in the marketplaces, the actual Greek terminology. It doesn't mean you couldn't barter or buy or sell. It just means that you're completely excluded from the marketplace. So wouldn't it make sense that eventually, you know, they got microchips, smart cards, they call them, that carry all this data on them. Wouldn't it make sense that eventually they'd say, look, you can put this little tiny chip in your skin, and anywhere you go, it's there. There it is. It says the right hand or forehead, okay? Well, one, you know, there's any way you slice it, identification boils down to that, right? What do you use? How do police make a permanent identification record of an arrest? Fingerprints, right hand, forehead. Now, the new thing is retina scans, right? Retinal scans, that's the new biological thing. A retina is like a fingerprint. There's no two alike. So you've got that combined with this chip that eventually gets embedded in us. And, you know, voila, you're out. You can go anywhere, do anything. Ladies don't need their purse. You get this awesome little chip. You can go to Nordstrom's and have your Nordstrom's card downloaded on it. You can go, you know, wherever, right? It's just like ease and convenience. And man, what a great thing. No more identity theft because it's you. Eventually the phones, you know, what is Apple's already got it on the iPhone, right? And I'm sure Droid does too. You know, retinal scans, facial scans, all this stuff until everything you need is somehow neatly packed into this little bitty device, whatever that may be, could just be your phone or whatever. So I just, you know, looking at it from an actual mathematical perspective, I can see where the VISA could easily be Roman numeral 6 and then Hebrew 6 and Greek 6, or Greek 6, Hebrew 6, you know, the S looks like a six, and the way they draw it is actually different, and but it's close. If you didn't recognize it, it's like if you looked at Arabic and you didn't speak it or read it, like me, you could probably pick out symbols and say, well, that looks like a five, or that looks like a nine, or an S, or whatever, you know, and that could have been what he was looking at. I'm not saying there's a fact there, but it makes a lot of sense to me, and it all ties together, and as fast as things are going right now and the insanity of the world we live in, I'm not sure how long we got, folks. I was talking to a gentleman today, a couple of them, that are in fairly tight with D.C., old friends, and I mean, just they're there. And one comment one of them made was, we were talking about the whole Trump versus Bernie Sanders thing. And I said, Trump is going to crush the next election. And this gentleman who is the equivalent, basically, I won't even name the position, but it's as high as you can go without pretty much being in the top tiers of the White House. He said, well, apparently you have a lot of faith in the system. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And I said, people, you know, people have it figured out. They've da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, you're assuming the election's going to be fair. I said, are you saying it's not? He said, no, I'm not saying it's not. But he said, all of this stuff that's been going on, all of these accusations against Trump are based on election tampering and collusion with other nations. And then we get into Ukraine and Russia and even Saudi Arabia, all these things. And we have these nations that are apparently manipulating our election system per se. Now, the one thing is we do have freedom of the press, and we have the attitude that if someone from the outside is advertising or marketing or technically, you know, campaigning on the inside from another country, that's, you know, a violation of who knows what. They try to grab onto the Hatch Act which was written a long, long time ago, which is rarely, I think, if ever enforced, which basically says if you have any kind of financial compensation or benefit from, foreign dignitaries and leaders of other nations, that you're in a position of the same, you're basically breaching. It's a form of treason, which is true. Even if it isn't intended that way, it needs to be disclosed. Well, it shouldn't even take place while you're sitting in office. But even if it isn't bad, it's the optics, as CNN would say. It's the impression of impropriety. And they've tried to accuse Trump of that. He has hotels here. I mean, it just goes on and on. I don't need to do this, but for you, I'm sure you know. I am confident. I cannot believe that people in general aren't a little smarter than the media treats them. I have to believe that, when somebody just sits in front of you and rants and raves and belittles and mocks and cuts down our elected leader, the most powerful man in the world, who truly is, I think it'd be hard to argue that he's not doing his best. They've got this, he's a crook, he's corrupt, he's, okay, great. What is the crime? Well, they want to come up with all this stuff that's already been proven wrong. Can you really believe that, the power of the Congress and the Senate and the FBI and the CIA and numerous other countries around the world that don't like Trump, do you not believe that if there was dirt, they'd have found it by now? I mean, I think Trump's a little cleaner than they like. He doesn't fit. He came to drain the swamp. And you basically see these demons. I see them just attacking with full force and vitriol, which is very intimidating to the average person. They're being held back by a hedge. We always pray for a hedge. God's got a hedge around that man. He's got a hedge around his office. He's got a hedge around his people. And they're like dogs on chains or wild animals up against a fence, and they walk through the fence. But they're spiritually lacking any authority to do so. And he's really hit the hot button. He was so right. He has a sense of wisdom that doesn't make a lot of sense to us sometimes, because when he speaks, he doesn't come across as being overly wise. He may be a little worldly wise. He knows how to push buttons and pull triggers and get people to go off. And long ago, because the ongoing abuse and vitriol and infighting. But a while ago, maybe a couple years, he said, "I am just showing you the truth about media." Now, this guy knows media. He went out and he had The Apprentice show. His first campaign manager, I wish I had her name, who stepped down when he had gotten his nomination and said he is not fit for president. He wasn't prepared. He wanted to be a protest candidate. And she said that he thought he'd get 11% of the populace, 11% of the constituency on his side, and then he'd be a protest campaigner like Ross Perot, and he would be able to influence the Republican Party by handing them his people in exchange for certain things. She said he was not ready, and she bailed, and I don't think that was a very wise choice. Corey Lewandowski came in and did a wonderful job. And Trump just did what he does, and he didn't change, and he didn't compromise. He didn't give up. He didn't apologize. And he taught us, America, that, you stand for what you believe in. The Republican Party had become neutered. I mean, they were impotent. They were pathetic, frankly. And I'm not saying they're not a little bit close to that now. But at least they are staying mostly together. You got the old Mitt Romney move, who ran for president and Trump, kind of derided his campaign and his weakness. But frankly, before the election against Obama, first of all, Mitt Romney, when it came to debates and speeches, he looked like a fool. Obama just spoke down to him like a foolish child when he was saying Russia is our greatest threat. And Obama said, well, yeah, hey, Mitt, you know, you're out of touch. He made him sound old and clueless. He said, the 80s are calling and they want their foreign policy back, which is a sarcastic, very sarcastic way of saying, you know, you're doing business 40 years ago, which is actually now. What are we ranting and raving about? Russia. What did Mitt know at the time? We don't know. He was Senator Mitt Romney or governor. The governor of the state of Utah. And, what did he know? We don't know what he knew about what was going on at the time, but he was right on the money. But the last couple weeks of the election, even Bill O'Reilly, when he came to Spokane, when we were listening to him, was saying that Fox had all these slots open for the Romneys, their family, during the last 2 weeks of the campaign, coming right up to the election. Mitt no-showed. Mitt's appointment scheduler, booker, whatever you call it, was his wife. And apparently they had a problem with Fox News. What that is, I have no clue. But who cares, right? You're talking about the benefit and well-being of the people of the United States of America. If I've seen anything in Mitt Romney, now one thing I'll admit, you remember Trump just destroyed people on his way up. I mean, he has a very sharp tongue, and he's tougher than nails, and you hit him, and you better be ready for about five major punches coming back at you. Well, Mitt is obviously oversensitive. He's too tender. He's very possibly bloated with pride. I've been told that when he's voted against Trump for this ridiculous, scandalous mockery of an impeachment hearing, which everyone knew, every single person knows it's fake. There's the radical left just wishes it's not, or wishes it were true, and they want more than anything to destroy this guy before they get to the polls. Now they're lining the streets with lies that, you know, oh, we can't trust the election results, you know, and all. Great job, Democrats. Tear America down. Just destroy everybody's faith in the system. So what? So they think, oh, when these, you know, naysayers, or as the mockers and scoffers, as the Bible calls them, and trust me, there's a lot of statements in Proverbs about mockers and scoffers. So we're supposed to think when these mockers and scoffers get back in office, everything's going to be okay. Well, wrong. Corruption continues. I mean, when we get to the point where the highest law enforcement agency on earth, the FBI, is having internal corruption intentionally against the president, and during a campaign, they create false charges based on this Steele dossier, which was an absolute sham of lies. They take this thing to the FISA court, which the FISA court is a secret court that's supposed to allow warrants to spy on foreign spies. So they take this false information to the FISA court and they start, you know, they do everything they can and they still can't hold Trump down. They were in shock. And when Trump came out in the campaign and again, sarcastically said to Russia, hey, they said Russia's been hacking this and hacking that. And the Democrats, when all the information came out from the DNC that they were undermining, Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz were blockading Bernie Sanders and not allowing him to proceed and all this corruption, they came up with all these emails and all this information, all these facts of complete terrible corruption. So the Democrats came out and said, oh, that's the Russians. And everybody's like, what? Well, the guy who did it according to WikiLeaks. What's his name? Can't think of it right now. According to him, without directly implicating the specific individual, he came on the air on Hannity very angry and basically alluded to the fact that this DNC internal informant who'd supposedly released these things, well, that he had just been assassinated. A random accidental drive-by shooting at night on a dark hole in D.C. I think I've mentioned I walked through that area, and I'm telling you, it's a dark hole. There's one spot where you see how it could happen. So someone watched him, supposedly drove by, popped him, and got rid of him. And, you know, this is the kind of corruption that's going on. You get the pedophile that was in prison, the billionaire, and he suddenly ends up dead. Supposedly, at Jeffrey Epstein, he ends up supposedly committing suicide in prison, the perfect set of storm, and it goes away. They get away with it. The Clintons are surrounded by this stuff. The level of corruption is just crazy. You know, and we've got all this stuff going on. And then you have people like Mitt Romney, who essentially handed over the election. I guess he felt like he'd been tongue-lashed by Obama or something, and he just hands over the country. The same thing happened to John McCain, if you recall, in the 08 election, and then Romney in 12. They both stepped down. McCain was saying things that were crazy, saying, you know, the media is just pressuring, saying, you're going to lose, you're losing in the polls, they've got all the momentum, you know, and asking him these loaded garbage questions. And McCain was technically, he's a rhino, a Republican in name only. And he took the bait, took the pressure, and collapsed. People cannot stand under that kind of pressure. That is what makes Trump so unique. And that is why God, I believe, chose him for that position at this time. And it's important. A lot of people are like, only believers can serve God. Well, God knows Trump's heart. Trump, you know, he gets evangelicals in there. His VP Pence is probably one of the most godly governors that existed. Really great guy, but Bible studies. Trump's, you know, studying the Bible, learning about God. I believe he's accepted Christ based on a number of statements and information I've had or picked up here and there from the inside. And I actually believe that he has. I really do. And, you know, God knew his heart. And God, if a man has a heart willing, he can work. And so we're sitting in a good spot. But here's what I think is important. I started on the Fed. The Fed, what is the Fed? The Federal Reserve Bank is a private bank that was created or allowed to be created by Congress. And John Maynard Keynes, it's Keynesian economics, we basically go back into the 1800s and we have a series of events that really ramped socialism, communism up. Socialism and communism are one and the same. Socialism is the theory. Communism is the application. The reason being, socialism is completely contrary to human nature. God made us to be money motivated, bottom line. There's just no other way around it. He made us to be motivated in many ways. Not to be equal, not to all get together like a big hippie commune. And so you go back into the 1840s. Now, these dates, don't write them down because I'm not exactly right. But, you know, hypothetically, you got Darwin comes out with this theory of evolution. The more I study this stuff, the more ridiculous it is. And why people want it so bad, it's just foolish to me. As believers, you got to be careful, I think, on hanging on to the 6,000-year-old Earth theory or universe theory. It doesn't matter, okay? It really does not matter. what matters is his earth creation was done in 6 days. And I think basically, I'm going to go there here real quick, see if we can get something going. What's important, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, okay? That is the granddaddy intro sentence of the entire Bible, okay? That doesn't, it's not just right then and there, like, okay, all he creates the heavens and the earth. Then there is a pause, an eretz. There's a waiting period. There's a, they call it some kind of parsing, and I've read about it. I'm not an expert at Hebrew, and I won't pretend to be. But there's a pause. It's a first sentence, and it basically separates itself from the second sentence. So it tells us, in the beginning, way back then, God created everything. Then it takes us to a point in time where the earth was formless and void. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the water. So he goes from the entire universe, everything that exists, the heavens and the earth. Now, note, he's not telling us about the creation of angels and all this stuff because it's already been done. He's telling us about, in, you know, in Proverbs it says, through wisdom he created the heavens and the earth. He created the entire kaboom. I mean, Big Bang Theory, you bet. There was a great Big Bang, and it was called the Word of God, the Logos. He spoke us into being. Then when we come to Genesis 1:2, the earth was formless and void. Okay, these words are tohu and bohu. Okay, it's important to understand this. How does God create things? Perfect, imperfect. You tell me, does he create junk that's broken? So here's what the word tohu means. Formless, it means vain, vanity, wasteland, confusion, without form, a desolate wilderness, an empty place. And then it goes on and it says, you know, filled with confusion, nothingness, empty space. It just goes on like that. Place of chaos. Chaos keeps coming up. It's a disaster. It's wiped out. Hypothetically, if God's been around longer than we have, which is a small chance, maybe there's a history there. Maybe things were different. Maybe who knows what the earth went through before. That's tohu. That's the formless. Then we go into, so the earth was formless and void. Bohu. Void is the same thing. It's an absolute desolate waste space. An empty void of no use, and then it goes in an undistinguishable ruin, and on it goes. I mean, you know, it just goes, it's just destroyed, wasted, wiped out, you know, even it uses the word explosion. There's all kinds of different words, dynamos that pop up here. So the earth's trashed. At this point, covered with water, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Okay, so where's Lucifer in all this? I don't know. Obviously, he's involved somewhere watching this stuff, because eventually when God creates man, they cry out as they watch from the heavens, which means the physical solar system. So we're in a situation at that point where the earth is formless and void. It's absolutely a great big water-covered ball. Under the earth, when we go to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and other places on earth, we get to what they call the great nonconformity. I don't know why they call it nonconformity, because it doesn't conform with the theory of evolution or period. We'll just leave it at that. It is a red granite ball. So under all the dirt and all the organic breakdown and all the everything, the dust and the, you know, the mountains and all this stuff, underneath it all is a nice, hard, literally polished, shiny red ball of red granite. That is the real crust of the earth. So on top of this, where did all this stuff come from? You know, I mean, who knows? We don't know. All the dirt could have been, you know, brought in God's dump trucks or something. I mean, no, seriously. I mean, meteorites, asteroids, who knows? Could have been a collision with another planet. There's theories of that. They knew in the Old Testament things about Mars and other planets that we hadn't found until, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And then, out of the blue, God says, let there be light. And there was light. Now, God does miracles for sure. But, you know, to us, if we were watching, it may look like, you know, some kind of a physical manifestation. Why was there light all of a sudden? Was it the sun finally broke into, you know, a certain kind of combustion where it was putting out light? Was it the was there black clouds over the earth that were removed with who knows what when? So he saw the light, and God is light, by the way, and it was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. You know, shadows, linear light has the properties of a wave and a particle, and so, you know, it can be blocked, and, you know, there's just a lot of things. That's what's interesting about light, is it can be separated easily. Even with a spectrum, you can separate it in all the different colors and everything. So then he calls the light day, and he calls the darkness night. There was evening, and there was morning, one day. So it's not in one day he created the whole heavens and the earth, and the earth was formless and void, and he went over the, you know, destroyed, and then he went over the waters of this one planet out of how many trillion, and then said, let there be light. No, it's saying now, it steps forward, okay? The earth was formless and void, darkness was over the surface of the earth, etc. So anyway, the bottom line is that's day one. Then, you know, he goes on, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, let it separate the waters from the waters. There's all kinds of stuff I could talk about with this. Turgor, surface tension of water. Water's amazing. It's one of the most incredible molecular compounds in the universe. It's phenomenal. Necessary for life, but one of the only compounds that expands when it freezes, so it doesn't go to the bottom of the lake. It floats on top so we don't freeze to death or the earth doesn't freeze over, etc. So he creates this expanse in the midst of the waters. The water was already here. Right? It says that, you know, it goes straight to the fact that there's water and he's going over the surface of the water in his spirit. All of a sudden, he separates the waters from the waters. Okay? Not sure what all that means. Maybe, you know, mountains and things like that. But also, you have the firmament above and the firmament below. He says, God made the expanse. Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters that separate the waters from the waters. God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below this expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. Okay? We don't have that today, folks. Yeah, we got clouds. And yeah, they have condensation and there's water that comes out of them, but that water comes up, it evaporates, it condenses, comes back down, goes back up. You get the point. It's not permanently up there. So there was something before the flood, in my belief, the firmament above, which would have incredible effects on Earth. You know, it would block out all the cosmic rays. It would increase the atmospheric pressure tremendously. It would very likely, some experts say, act as an absolute telescope to the outer stars. It would magnify noises. It could potentially put out sound from different planets and from the universe. And, you know, who knows? I mean, I really think prior to the flood, there might have been a pretty cool thing. I don't think most people realize that. And it separates the water below and water above. He called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and morning, a second day. The problem is with translations, the word for heaven is shamayim in ancient Hebrew, and that word simply means sky, visible heavens, etc., etc. Atmosphere is the other word. So he created what we see as the sky. So you have to be really careful about English translations. The appropriate translation would be sky and atmosphere, you know, and maybe that's too much. I don't know. So that expanse, firmament above and below, day two, then let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, let the dry land appear, and it was so. So all of a sudden the water's starting to centralize. Obviously God has now changed the form of the earth. We had water on the entire face of the earth. Now all of a sudden we've probably got potentially some geographic or geologic features. You know, who knows for sure? There's a lot of theories when you look at the continents, tectonic plate shifting. They have what's called Pangaea. All of the continents on Earth spin backwards to one, almost like you'd have a great big ball with one great big massive continent. That is very possibly what Noah left. And later on saw things change when it says in the days of Peleg, he was named Peleg because the earth was being divided. And there are stories of the earth opening up after the flood and bringing in where people see fire and water and then sucking up whole towns because we have all this plate shifting after the great flood. So the waters below the heavens are gathered into one place, let the dry land appear, and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and gathering of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. And remember, on the firmament above and below, it tells us during the flood, it never rained before on earth. Mist came up from the earth. Well, how could it have never rained if the firmament above was just clouds, right? I mean, it's pretty foolish, right? Then it says, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seeds, fruit trees, and the earth bearing fruit after their kind, seed in them. And it was so, the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind, and God saw that it was good. So he's got plants yielding seed, very important because they reproduce. So now the next thing we've got geographic formation or geologic formation. We've got water, and now we've got plants. We've got a firmament above and below, which I believe makes a perfect greenhouse scenario. Things start to grow, reproduce. Evening, there was evening and morning, a third day. Now remember, the way we measure time, folks, is not in any way universal. We measure time based on the Earth's revolution around the sun, right? 1 year is one full revolution of an orbit, and then the actual revolution upon its axis is once every 24 hours, which gives us a day, okay? So, has the Earth always spun the same speed? Is that in a system that we're in, does it slow down? You know, we know that every time we measure the speed of light, it's slowing down. But don't get me wrong, light's still moving pretty darn fast. I think it's, 186,000 meters per second squared. It's real fast, but we are seeing kind of a diminishing acceleration or a deceleration. How about we call it that? So we got the vegetation, we got all that stuff. We got the third day. Then we got, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. Let them be for signs and seasons, for days and years. Okay. Let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. So you got a few different things going on there. Stars, the moon, whatever, right? The greater lights. He's got, God made the two great lights. What's that? The sun and the moon. The greater lights to govern the day, the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. Okay. So all of a sudden, this stuff's coming together. It's forming, condensing, whatever's going on. We don't know how God did it. I mean, people listen and say, oh, that sounds like evolution. No, not even close. It sounds like God made something. And we're trying to put it on our time frame. You know, I don't know, you know, if you've studied math much, but if you draw a timeline, if I take the smallest known thing on Earth, it's basically at the quantum level of an atom, the most smallest, most incredible thing. If you take a line and draw it from Earth to every star in the universe and back to Earth, and again, and again, and again, and again. And somewhere on one of those lines, you know, there's 6 trillion stars. You put this infinitesimally minuscule speck. That is still more than our lifespan is in light of eternity. I mean, eternity is eternity. And so when time was created for us, our time. God gave us our time to give us a sense of urgency and show us, you know, the demise of our, you know, sin and broken and whatever, right? We have to realize that we have a very limited thinking. And time, so often, the more I studied physics, you know, and Einstein really went after time and, you know, the E equals MC squared and all that. And if you accelerate past the speed of light, do you catch up to yourself? And, you know, crazy things like that, that you can technically mathematically prove. And so time is a bizarre dimension because it's a half a dimension. We can move forward. We can't move back. We can look back. We can't look forward. Thus, you can catch up to yourself if you're traveling the speed of light. Light and time are one and the same. So when we're trying to measure this creation event, we're dependent upon, number one, light that God created to measure time, which actually, you know, was relatively important. There had to be, I mean, he created these expanses and all this stuff. And then after that, he says, let there be light, you know? So there had to be something going on before that for the vegetation to grow and all that. And I know you're saying, well, God can do anything. Okay. So he planted a whole bunch of stuff in the dark and with seed, you know, I don't think so. You just have to use your logical mind. And yes, there is an explanation. There's not some physical explanation like, you know, a meteorite hit the Earth and it had this and that on it and it created this kind of frictional explosion and these chemicals came together and created this, you know, this special potion that led to life or not. I'm not saying any of that stuff. I'm just saying that if you use your head, you know, it's obvious that God had, you know, light was created. Light is relevant to time. That's a mathematically known in physics and astronomy and everything. No light, no time. No time, no light. Kind of interesting, hard to understand. Light is the ultimate measurement of time. And you can't see anything without light anyway, so that's the thing. So we can't think because I've heard people say, well, if I can't understand it, then it can't be real, right? I mean, it makes no sense to me. It's like, really, you're this little microcomputer that's created by God. I mean, we're phenomenal. We're the greatest thing we know of. And some people are really confident about that. But at the same time, we are limited to think only what he's given us to think. God gives us enough information to make a decision of faith. And that's what this is. And this is true. The Bible's accurate and true on everything else. So this is a recap that Moses laid out. Based on what? Other scriptures, other book of Jasher, we don't know for sure. I've studied that a long time ago. I can't recall the answer. I'd tell it to you. So you got the dry land, the earth, you got plants, you got evening and morning, you got the third day, you know, you got the lights in the expanse of the heavens, you got, you know, light on earth and the big light and the little light, and he also made the stars. And, you know, so we've done all that. Evening and morning and fourth day. God said, let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens. So now God's creating sea creatures and flying things. Well, that's actually not consistent with the age of evolution. We don't go from a microcelled organism to a flying beast. And then he says, winged bird after its kind, and God saw that it was good. And every time he says, they swarmed after their kind. Every winged bird after its kind. That means species. As long as we've been here, no, as long any geological, anthropological, archaeological dig will never find anything that shows evidence of one species ever changing to another. We are programmed with DNA. The fact of, you know, birth and all that is beyond phenomenal, because it's essentially the DNA is a code that God put in each one of our cells at the ATP level that dictates, it's a computer code that tells it exactly what it's going to become. This is why people really obsess about stem cells. And people are so confused about stem cells. Stem cells are cells that can adapt and, you know, and become whatever they need to be, essentially. But embryonic stem cells are even better. They can reform something that's never been formed if the DNA is already programmed into them. This is why they're so obsessed with embryonic stem cell research. And trust me, I'm not condoning it, because they're always saying, well, you get them out of aborted babies. No, 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 no. That's a problem for sure. But, you know, this is why they're so obsessed with this stuff, because you can, within a species, you can start to rejuvenate these different things. It doesn't leave the species, obviously. But now I'm just saying that because there's all this stuff about stem cells. People pay huge money for amniotic fluid stem cells that they take out of pregnant women's stomachs, or they take it at birth. And folks, I'm not so sure about that. I've done a lot of research. I've talked to people. I know a guy who was the main proponent of it in the United States, and he sold a lot of it and made a lot of money. The prices were ridiculous, and there's not a whole lot of really good evidence that it works as they say it works. That's because they're not embryonic, okay? So then, now we got fish or water creatures, which, you know, we don't know. Great sea monsters and every living creature. So it's teeming with swarms of living creatures. And he says, well, here, we'll do this real quick. So then God said, let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures. Let the birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens. God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind, and God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. There was evening and morning, a fifth day. Then God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind. Now we've got four-legged mammals, cattle, and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind. And it was so. So now we got dry land animals. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind, species. In other words, God made the beasts of the earth after its species, the cattle after their species, and everything that creeps on the ground, bugs, insects, whatever, after its species, amphibians, reptilians, whatever. And he saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the birds of the sky, over the cattle, over all the earth, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. He created man in his own image, keyword create, in the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. He blessed them, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, birds of the sky, I keep saying air, and over every living thing that moves on earth. So man has dominion over everything on earth. We have a responsibility to take care of it. And it's interesting, the more people grow towards God, I've seen time and time again, the closer they get and the greater fondness they get for God's love and life. And I'll tell you, folks, one thing with mammals, we have a superior intellect, no doubt. Mammals are very familial, okay, family-oriented. They have emotion and attachment, and God's shown me this, and I've seen it, and I love life, and I love animals. We just don't sport kill. Sport hunting, going, people that go over to Africa and shoot giraffes and elephants, you don't do it. Elephants, you know, they say the longest memory, and, you know, their kids stay with them forever, and I mean, I'm, you know, some of you might think I'm cuckoo, but I'll tell you what, I'm not. We have got an absolute stewardship responsibility to take care of the earth. Jesus made that very clear in many of his parables. That's the master that leaves us in charge of the vineyard, and he's going to come back and see what we did. Among that is our parable of talents. Our talents, what he's given us inside, what he's given us physically outside, all these things are relevant. So he says, behold, I've given you every plant yielding seed that's on the surface of all the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed, and it shall be food for you, and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth which has life. I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and morning the sixth day. And then I will stop there. I'm out of time. Folks, notice something. To every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth which has life, I've given what? Every green plant for food. So they all ate vegetarian. No. I'm not a vegetarian. Just saying. So thanks for tuning in again, folks. Do us a favor. Go to Google. Go to Yelp, go to Facebook, whatever. Give us 3 nice 5-star reviews. Call us, verify it. We'll give you 2 nice Morgan Silver dollars. Also, we're getting our staff under control here, so sorry for those I still have to call back. It's been crazy, but I intend to do that soon. Take care, God bless, and thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye. Have a great night.